Today we're going to review everything we've learned in first 50 shiurim. Absolutely. Started out, Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelek Olam Hava. All of Yisrael has a portion in the world to come. And Farshim asks, why do we find sometimes in the Gemara, so-and-so is mezuman l'chei Olam Hava, so-and-so is invited to Olam Hava, if everyone is invited to Olam Hava? The answer we gave at the time was that when we say so-and-so is invited to Olam Hava, it means straight to Olam Hava without going to Gehenna first. You may have given other answers. We then started talking about Tchias HaMesim. We talked extensively about Tchias HaMesim, including about one of the details of it, and Mar mentioned that said you can get up in their clothing. And after extensively discussing Tchias HaMesim, we seemingly, as a tangent, started talking about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Mar had asked, why don't we learn about Tchias HaMesim from the Mesim that Yechezkel resurrected, and Gemara answered that question and then got into talking about the Mesim that Yechezkel resurrected, which led us to talk about things that happened on the same day, which led us to talk about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. When we're talking about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, we talked about Tzadikim being greater than Malachim. Then we talked about where were other Tzadikim and saw that unlike Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who wanted to give up their lives on Kiddush Hashem, all the other Tzadikim went into hiding. They didn't want to die. They wanted to keep living. That is summary of everything we've learned. Now, seemingly, it was kind of just random associations of one thing leading to another. However, Rav Tzadok HaKohen writes that every Agadata is placed where it is because of a connection that it has to the to the topic of that chapter of Gemara. Unlike Rashi, who frequently, when there's Agadata, Rashi will say, because we were mentioning Rabbi so-and-so, now we'll quote more teachings of Rabbi so-and-so. Rav Tzadok suggests that we should look for a deeper connection. He says in Pri Tzadik, Volume 5, page Kuf Vav Amud Gimel, meaning there are four columns on a daf, so the third column is referred to as Amud Gimel. He says that Agadata always has a connection to the subject matter at hand. For example, Matan Torah is discussed in Masechet Shabbos, and specifically in the Perek Rabbi Akiva, name of a Perek in Masechet Shabbos, because the Torah was given on Shabbos, and because Rabbi Akiva is considered the root of Torah Shebaal Peh, as the Arizal writes. You can understand on a simpler level that we say Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and Stam, different midrash, halachic midrashim are different Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva. All of them were Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Kiva is the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh, even though there was Torah Shebaal Peh before him. And there are people quoted in the Mishnah who lived before Rabbi Kiva, but the main development of it was right. The main development was through the students of Rabbi Kiva. Not 100%, but the main development was through the students of Rabbi Kiva. The Agadata of the Churban Beis HaMikdash is in Masechet Gittin, because when Hashem destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, it was like he divorced the Jewish people, sent us away. Pasuk, in fact, says, Eza Sefer Kritut Imchem, where is the get of your mother? So that's how it appeared, as if Hashem sent Jewish people away, but really, it was just a temporary injury. Therefore, it's in the Perek called Hanizakian, those who are damaged. Gemara is about Shlomo Melech losing his throne, being overthrown by the king of the Shadim. That's also Masechet Gittin. It also appears as if Shlomo HaMelech was divorced, and he discusses that a little bit. And the Man is in Masechet Yuma, in the Perek Yom HaKippurim, because Man was food that angels ate, which is how Chazal referred to it, the food that the angels eat. On Yom Kippur, we don't eat regular food, so we're sustained by our spirituality, just like Malachim are sustained by some kind of spiritual food. Now, the Man, it started out as spiritual food, but it came down to earth and it turned into regular food. And that's what the eating of Erev Yom Kippur, which is the spiritual food turned into regular food. So, therefore,
the regular food turns into spiritual food.
The food we eat on Erev Yom Kippur is a physical form of the spirituality that's coming on Yom Kippur. That's what it's supposed to be anyway. So
Isn't all food supposed to be like that? I mean, you're supposed to be, ideally, you're supposed to be eating.
For on Erev Yom Kippur, a person has a greater chance of realizing this lofty goal. So that's what Rav Tzadok says. Rav Tzadok doesn't say anything about our Gemara, but that's the principle that he establishes, that we should look for connections between the Agadata and its location. Based on that idea, I came across a piece by Rav Kook. I have no evidence that Rav Kook wrote this piece for the purpose that with which I'm going to use it today, which is to tie together all these different subjects that we've learned about, or not everything we've learned about, but a number of the different things we learned about. Rav Kook actually wrote kind of just stream of consciousness in notebooks. Rav Kook left hundreds of notebooks, and most of the svarim that we have that we say Rav Kook wrote, he didn't write his. He wrote the notebooks, just stream of consciousness, one paragraph has nothing to do with the next. His son and his leading student went through his notebooks and created svarim on topics out of his notebooks. So those have been published, but also his notebooks have been published in their original form. And what I'm going to tell you today appears in recently published Sefer Metziut Katan, which is his first notebook, paragraph Samach Gimel. He starts by asking, Gemara says in Tanis, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov Avinu did not die. The Gemara asks, then why do you have a eulogy? And the Gemara answers, I'm just telling you a pasuk. Pasuk implies that Yaakov didn't die. He says, what kind of answer is that? He had a eulogy. He was embalmed. He seemingly died. What is the Gemara answering? He died. He was eulogized. He was embalmed. He was buried. What kind of answer is it to say, but the pasuk implies he never died? All these things happen. That's question number one. Question number two is, we said that whereas Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were ready to give up their lives, all the other tzaddikim of the generation went into hiding and didn't want to give up their lives. Why not? Why do tzaddikim enjoy life in the first place? So you might say, because they want to serve Hashem. Says it's not a satisfactory answer. Malachim also serve Hashem. We say that Malachim sing Shira. That's some form of serving Hashem. Why is our form of serving Hashem more desirable than what Malachim do? Parenthetically, he doesn't say this, but don't say, because we have a Yetzer Hara and we'll defeat the Yetzer Hara and we'll get greater reward, because we don't serve Hashem for a reward. That's not why. That's why Hashem gives us reward. That's why Hashem created us the way he did, but we don't serve Hashem for reward. We serve Hashem because we want to serve Hashem. So angels also serve Hashem. Why is it more desirable to serve Hashem as people than to die and become angels and serve Hashem?
We have free will. They don't have free will.
But so what?
So we're
we have free will.
We're exercising our free will. They're just doing it, so to say, by rote. It's programmed in.
The purpose of the free will is so Hashem could reward us. But we're not serving Hashem for reward. So after we've served Hashem with our free will for 120 years, okay, we've done it. Now we should be happy to die and serve Hashem like Malachim do. Why do we want life? And why do we want Tchias HaMesim? What's so great? Tchias HaMesim, there won't be free will. Why do we want Tchias HaMesim?
You're asking why do we try to stretch it out?
Right, as much as we can. Right.
They weren't 120 when they went.
Again, the fact that we have free will is a reason for Hashem to reward us for what we do. But we are not serving Hashem for the purpose of getting rewards. Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Don't serve Hashem to get reward. We're serving Hashem because he wants us to serve him. So why is, if he just wants us to serve him, the question is, why is the human way of serving him more desirable to us than the way angels serve him? That's his question. So he brings our Gemara, Gedolim Tzadikim Yoter Malchei Asharet, and he brings Rav Chaim Volozhin. And I quoted this last week, but I quoted something in the name of Rav Kook that was actually in the name of Rav Chaim Volozhin. He adds to it, and I wasn't clear where the line is. Rav Chaim Volozhin says, we saw that there are Rishonim like Ibn Ezra, who say Malachim are clearly greater than people. And we see the opinion of the Gemara and other commentaries that tzaddikim are greater than malachim. Chaim Volozhin says in Nefesh HaChaim, Shar Aleph Perek Yod, that there's no contradiction between them. And I gave the mashal, which I think is an accurate mashal for what Rav Chaim Volozhin is saying, of the light bulbs. 175 light, watt light bulb versus 10 watt light bulbs. Which one is brighter? So it's really a question of how you look at it. Altogether, 10 watt light bulbs give off more light than 175 watt light bulb. But at a specific point, 175 watt light bulb is brighter than any one of the 10 watt light bulbs. So the angels are, so to speak, one point of light. An angel has one mission, has one thing that the angel specializes in. The angel is one point of holiness. That specific point of holiness is holier than any specific aspect of a human being. A human being's neshama is made up of many parts. We've heard of nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida, which are five aspects of the neshama. There apparently are subdivisions and lots of different aspects of the neshama. Each of those is one 10-watt bulb. The neshama as a whole, the human neshama as a whole, can shine brighter than a malach. But any one aspect of the human being at any given time is dimmer than a malach. That's in this world, because the body limits the ability of the neshama to shine. And also because, he says, if you put two physical objects together, there will always be space between them. These two surfaces are not perfectly smooth. So even though they appear to be, you know, flush with each other, but there are some pockets of air in between. Similarly, the pasuk says, "Saviv rishayim yitalechun." The rishayim go around. The rishayim surround. There are forces of tuma surrounding every force of kedusha, and they prevent forces of kedusha from bonding together tightly. So the parts of our neshama have all these forces of tuma interrupting between them and preventing them from bonding together and acting as one unit. And therefore, in Olam Hazeh, the neshama is not able to give off its full light. And in fact, each part of the neshama has to be viewed separately. And each one is dimmer than the light, so to speak, given off by a malach. So that's what Nefesh HaChaim says. Rav Kook says that that's why we find one of the Ibn Ezra's questions was, why did tzaddikim bow down to malachim, as Yeshua did and as Daniel does? According to Ibn Ezra, that proves that malachim are greater than tzaddikim. Rav Kook says, based on what Rav Chaim Volozhin says, we can understand that at that particular point in time, Yeshua, being a living person, could not realize his full potential, his full light, and therefore he was, at that particular moment, subservient to a malach. The same thing with Daniel. In light of this, we can understand why we look forward to Tchias HaMesim. Why not just be angels forever, so to speak? That, you know, why not serve Hashem in a spiritual way like the angels do after we die? Why do we look forward to Tchias HaMesim? Because when we die, just like the body decomposes and spreads, you know, out to the four corners of the world, so to speak, the dust, so too the neshama, after a person dies, each part goes its separate way. And when we talked about Gilgulim, idea that a part of a neshama could have a Gilgul. It doesn't necessarily mean the whole neshama has a Gilgul. Different parts of it can be in different people. Each of the different parts of the neshama go their separate way. At the time of Tchias HaMesim, the forces of Tuma will not exist. All the parts of the neshama will be able to bond together and work together and give off their full light. And in fact, will be multiplied many times, because once the forces of Tuma do not exist, and will in fact be brighter than, the light of the malachim. And that is, and then we'll be able to serve Hashem even more than malachim do, and even without Bechira and the Yetzirah. So that is what we're looking forward to at the time of Tchias HaMeisim. Rachuk says that we find in human situations, five people can accomplish more than five times one person. You know, five people can lift a load that's more than five times what one person could lift. That's why we look forward to Tchias HaMeisim. Now, why do tzaddikim desire life? Because this level that we're talking about can actually be accomplished by a person while he's alive. And when we say Yaakov Avinu lo meis, Yaakov Avinu didn't die, what we mean is that there's no difference for Yaakov from having died. Because Yaakov, while he was alive, was already on this level that we're talking about that people accomplish after they die. There are three levels. There's the level of a person who's alive. Then a person dies and he's in some way like a malach. He has no body, no yitzhara. And then there's a level of tchias hamesim where the body is purified and everything, and the body and the neshama reunite and accomplish their full potential. It says that a tzaddik, when he's alive, is on the level that a regular person is on when he dies. And a tzaddik, when he dies, is on the level that a regular person will be at time tchias hamesim. A tzaddik who has purified his body doesn't have a body even when he's alive. He says that this can explain a halacha. Halacha is that even though we say kol yisrael arvim zeh bazeh, all Jews are responsible for each other, and therefore a person can be motzi someone else with a mitzvah. However, a person cannot be motzi someone with a mitzvah that is not his mitzvah. So, for example, we just had Purim. A person who lives in Yerushalayim cannot read the Megillah on the 14th for someone. I mean, first, he lives in Yerushalayim. If he's spending all of Purim outside of Yerushalayim, he'd be chayiv in Megillah. But let's say he just came out of Yerushalayim for an hour on Purim morning. He's not chayiv in Megillah, so he can't be motzi someone else with Megillah. But why is that? She says that the benefit of being alive is that we have all these different parts of our neshama. It's true that there's a disadvantage. They can't shine as brightly as they could if they were all united as one. But nevertheless, a benefit of being alive is that we filter the kedusha that are given through many different levels and thereby share the kedusha with every level of existence. Say every mitzvah affects a different part of the body. Every mitzvah also affects a different part of the neshama. Therefore, we want to be alive and do mitzvahs when we're alive because we're able to express kedusha on so many different levels. If a person is not chayiv in a particular mitzvah, he's, so to speak, handicapped. He's not able to express kedusha on that level. So if it's not Purim for me, I am not able to express the kedusha of Purim. And therefore, I cannot be motzi somebody else in his mitzvah, of Purim, because right now my soul is missing that aspect. Tomorrow it's going to have that aspect. On Shushan Purim, Yerushalayim, my soul is going to be ready to express the holiness of Purim. But today my soul is not able to, and so that's why, related to this idea that we're talking about, a person cannot be motzi someone with a mitzvah that's not his own mitzvah. That was paragraph Samach Gimel. Paragraph Samach Dalad seems to be unrelated. Like I said, he just sat down and wrote Stream of Consciousness, and I guess after he wrote paragraph Samach Dalad, he realized he had more to say about the first subject and came back and wrote paragraph Samach Hey. He discusses the idea we find in Masachik Subos. Rabbi Huda Nasi would come back and make Kiddush for his family on Friday night after he died. Sefer Hasidim asks, how can that be? She usually mesim. Pasuk says, "B'meitim chofshi." A person who dies is free of mitzvos. We just said a person who's free of mitzvos can't be motzi someone else. How could Rabbi Yehuda Nasi be motzi his family with Kiddush? And Sefer Chassidim asks, there must be a difference between a regular person and a tzaddik. And he does not explain any further. However, now that we understand the concept a little bit of a tzaddik, Yaakov Avinu didn't die, and other tzaddikim don't die, because the neshama, after a person dies, each part goes its separate way. At time of Tchias HaMeisim, they all come back together in a united form. That's why after a person dies, he's pater for mitzvos, because the different parts of his neshama are all over different places in the spiritual worlds. And the idea of mitzvos, as I just mentioned, is to filter kedusha through all the different levels of a person. But if all the different levels of a person are in different places, then they can't work together to filter this kedusha through all the different levels. However, a tzaddik, when he dies, he's already on the level that the rest of us hopefully will be on time to Ches HaMesim, where our neshama comes back together and the parts reunite and work together again. So therefore, he's not exempt from mitzvos when he dies. Obviously, he's not doing mitzvos in the same way we are, but he's able to come and be motzi his family with kiddush. Apparently so. It must have been felt because he made kiddush for his family and they ate. If they didn't feel him making kiddush, they couldn't have eaten.
And the neighbor later complained.
That's right.
That the neighbor saw him and what's he doing here?
Tosfos brings that when Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, greatest of the Balei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam, when he passed away, his student, Rav Chaim HaKohen, said, there is no Tumah today. Kohanim are allowed to actively participate in Rabbeinu Tam's funeral. This has led to a great halachic discussion that continues even into the 20th century about whether a Kohen can participate in the funeral of a tzaddik. I mean, actively participate, touching the mace in the funeral of a tzaddik. The overwhelming majority of poskim say no. But Rav Chaim HaKohen, who was a student of Rabbeinu Tam, said Kohanim can participate in Rabbeinu Tam's funeral. So Rav Kook says maybe Rav Chaim HaKohen could sense that Rabbeinu Tam was on this level of Rav Yehuda HaNasi. Obviously, we have no way of knowing for sure. Like Rav Yehuda HaNasi and Yaakov Avinu, in a sense, he wasn't dead. His neshama didn't experience what most neshamos experience of coming apart when a person dies, and therefore there was no tumah. He also addresses Gemara that we addressed, time Ches HaMesim, coming back in clothing, and he says, this is in paragraph Yud Aleph. There are several paragraph Yud Alephs in the Sefer. This is the first one. Right now, the body is the clothing for the neshama. The time of Ches HaMesim, the body will be so purified and completely united with the neshama itself that the body will need clothing, will need a covering, the way the neshama today needs a covering, which is the body. The body itself will need some kind of covering, because it will be a spiritual force completely bonded with the neshama. And that's why the Gemara, that's the deeper meaning of the statement in the Gemara that we learned, that the body will come back with clothing. The Gemara says that a person should not be buried in his tzitzis. We also have an idea of a person should not, if he has long tzitzis, he shouldn't let his tzitzis drag on a tombstone. It's considered making fun of Mason. Why is it making fun of Mason? They're dead. What do they care? They're pater for mitzvos. So what do they care? How is it making fun of them? But now that we've said that a tzaddik can do mitzvos even after he dies, that there is such a level of Yaakov Avinu lo meis, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi lo meis, even possibly Rabbeinu Tam lo meis. So there is such a level that a tzaddik can reach where he can do mitzvos after he dies. Now, if you go to a cemetery and tell all the mason buried there, look, I'm wearing tzitzis and you're not, you're rubbing it in that they never reached the same level that other tzaddikim reached, that they could have reached. And so that's why it's loig larash, it's making fun of the mason.
The only people, the pasuk says, never died, or as Korach's sons. Is that the same type of, like, did they do mitzvahs, or?
They sang Shira. There the Gemara says that they landed on a cliff above Gehenna, but they stayed there and sang Shira. So they are doing some form of, that's what Malachim do, they sing Shira. So they are doing some form of service to Hashem. Another discussion, which I'm sure we'll have someday, of what is Gehenna? Is it a physical place? The Ramban writes that Gehenna is a physical place, as is Gan Eden. Lastly, what does it mean when we say that a tzaddik is mizuman l'chei olam haba, that somebody is invited to Olam Hava, if everyone has a share in Olam Hava, based on everything we've learned, it means that a tzaddik is invited immediately to Olam Hava. After he dies, he's already on the level of Tchias HaMesim, because while he was still alive, he was on the level that most people reach when they pass away. Tomorrow we will back the Gemara, at least briefly, before going off on some other tangent. So have a good day.